Today on the UW Medicine Pulse Podcast, the vaccine debate.
There is every reason to get vaccinated. There aren't reasons to not.
There are few tenets in healthcare that are as universally accepted by physicians as the notion that cigarettes are bad and vaccines are good.
Of the things I do as a general pediatrician, the most effective that I can offer are vaccines.
And yet somehow in the case of vaccines, seeds of doubt about their safety and effectiveness have been able to spread.
Some of them are mistrustful of authority, government, pharmaceutical agencies.
To the point where infectious diseases that once were thought beaten are making a comeback.
All these folks who say that they don't want to vaccinate themselves or their children against things like measles because we don't have it anymore. We do not have it right here, but many other people have it. And there are no borders. There's no fence tall enough. It's going to change how viruses and bacteria move across the planet.
This is the UW Medicine Pulse with Marty Reamer. Real-world stories of the discoveries being made at UW Medicine and the impact they're having on people here in the Pacific Northwest and around the world.
You should ask your parents to call a doctor. You see, what you think is a simple cold could really be the first symptoms of some other disease, such as measles.
In 1962, before the first measles vaccine was licensed in the United States, measles was a nearly universal disease. The U.S. saw an estimated 4 million cases of measles that year alone, leading to 450 deaths. So in the year 2000, when the CDC announced that measles had been eliminated from the U.S., from 4 million to zero, it was a huge accomplishment and a testament to the effectiveness of vaccines.
This is an amazing advancement in medicine, science, and public health that we have at our disposal.
Doug Opel is a UW professor of pediatrics based at Seattle Children's Hospital.
Not only in terms of how many lives we've saved, but also how many complications from these illnesses that we've prevented.
Now we turn to this growing concern over measles in this country. New numbers out from...
In the last 10 years, the number of measles cases in the U.S. have been steadily rising again, hitting 644 last year. This year, 2015, could be worse yet.
It's called the happiest place on earth. But it's
after visitors to Disneyland were exposed in January, resulting in over 100 infections from that one exposure.
Measles is an airborne disease, 10 times more contagious than a disease like Ebola, for example.
Dr. Jeff Duchin is a UW Medicine infectious disease specialist and chief of the immunization program at Public Health Seattle and King County.
On average, you know, a single person will infect 15 or more susceptibles that they come in contact with. It's airborne, which means it can linger in the air for a couple of hours after someone with measles leaves the room. So as what happened in Disneyland, very often with measles outbreaks, people don't understand where they even acquired the disease.
But didn't we just say that measles were eradicated from the U.S. back in 2000? What's causing this resurgence? It's not that the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, has suddenly been rendered ineffective. It's that the number of families opting out of immunizing their kids has grown. Pediatrician Doug Opel.
In my own practice, I started seeing more and more parents over the years come to my office and ask me, why are we still doing these, or why do I have to worry about this? And I think nationally, we are seeing, based on epidemiologic data, more parents who are opting their children out of required school entry vaccines.
Hi there.
Hi.
You gotta put your shoe back on, sweetie.
Hi. How old is he?
Two. You lost your shoe.
That's our producer, Tina Knoll, out on a recent sunny afternoon at an area playground to talk to parents about vaccines.
So the topic that we're talking about today is a vaccination.
Well, my husband has his cousin's son had a reaction to vaccinations, and so he was really concerned.
I don't know. I know a lot of people say that it causes autism.
And the one kind of argument that I can kind of understand is when people say, "Well, you shouldn't tell me what I should put in my kids."
Washington is one of 20 states that allow exemptions from vaccine requirements based on personal reasons. Nearly 5% of children in Washington have not received immunizations, either because of medical, religious, or, as Dr. Duchin points out, a variety of personal reasons.
I think people who choose not to get vaccinated or who choose not to have their children vaccinated come from a variety of different backgrounds and belief systems. It's not homogeneous. Some of them are mistrustful of authority, government, pharmaceutical agencies. Some of them are interested in more natural living and believe that it's better to get a natural infection than it is to get a vaccination that will protect you from that infection. And then there's a group that unfortunately is concerned about vaccine safety.
A great deal of this vaccine skepticism can be attributed to a report that was published in 1998 in a respected British medical journal called The Lancet.
So let's just reflect upon those and the impact that they've had on our thinking about causation. And
certainly, Andrew Wakefield, the author of that study, had linked the MMR vaccine to autism. And from that point on, vaccination rates in children began to fall. But there was a problem with that study. It was completely wrong. Not just wrong, but fraudulent.
He was basically kicked out of the UK, couldn't practice medicine, his license was revoked, and the paper was withdrawn from the journal in which it was published. However, that association still lingers in the minds of many people, you know, MMR and autism, even though multiple studies have since rebutted that connection. The most authoritative and knowledgeable autism experts do not believe vaccines are responsible for autism.
So that should have set the record straight, right? But it didn't. Because according to Dr. Duchin, for some reason, once the doubt or fear of vaccines sets in a person, scientific arguments and evidence no longer seem to hold much sway.
I think it's important to acknowledge that there's a large body of research that shows that presenting scientific data and fact to people who have emotional objections to an issue really doesn't sway their opinion. So if I knew the magic answer to how I could change people's minds who are just fearful because they decide that's how they want to be, or they just decide they don't like vaccination, despite being aware of the data that show that it's one of the greatest achievements in the history of public health. It has saved and continues to save millions and millions of lives globally each year. And that the reason that many of us are able to take vaccination for granted now is because of how well vaccines work in minimizing the visibility of some previously very common and deadly diseases.
In fact, Dr. Doug Opel is currently leading a vaccine study at the University of Washington. It's not about discovering a new vaccine or studying the effectiveness of a particular drug, but in a way something much more relevant to where we find ourselves today with this debate. He's trying to develop the most effective strategy by which to talk to parents to alleviate these immunization concerns.
So I enrolled parents and physicians around the community and videotaped these well-child checks, and specifically videotaped the discussions about vaccines that occurred during these well-child checks. And I found that there were really only two ways that they began these discussions with parents. First way was what I call the presumptive format for starting these vaccine discussions, which was, "Mom, Johnny has three vaccines due today, DTaP, Hib, and IPV, period." Sometimes they might add a question at the end of that by saying, "Is that okay?" or "How does that sound?" But in general, assuming that the parent was fine with it. The other way we saw physicians doing this was sort of the opposite way, not making a statement assuming, but trying to involve the parent in using an open-ended question. So, "What do you want to do about vaccines today?" or "How do you feel about vaccines?" When the doctor had used a presumptive format, "This is what we're doing," more parents accepted vaccines. Then if the doctor began by saying, "What do you want to do about vaccines?" parents were more likely to say, "Well, I actually only want to do a few today." More likely to resist the recommended vaccines if it was posed to them, you know, in an open-ended way.
So were you assuming it would go that way? Because as you were describing the scenarios, I was thinking the presumptive approach would get parents to, you know, throw up a block and say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa," before you push me into something.
That was probably my assumption too, was that if I was too presumptive with a parent who was already on the fence, I might make them further worried about their decision and less likely to accept vaccines than if I tried to involve them and gave them more control. In fact, pediatrics in general has started moving more into this patient-centered, shared decision-making realm, really for good reasons. I mean, the more we can involve parents and patients in their own decisions, give them more control, agency, there are good things that can come from that. But I think what this study showed me was that there are probably instances within healthcare where shared decision making probably isn't as appropriate.
As we said at the outset, prior to 1962 and the first MMR vaccine, measles was a virtually universal disease. If you grew up in the 50s or 60s, you could be assured of, at some point, contracting measles or knowing someone that had.
Peter, what are you doing home from school?
They sent me home. Measles.
It's either measles or a strange case of red freckles.
But like the chicken pox or mumps, you were sick, you recovered, you were immune. So why the alarm now over measles when it used to be so commonplace?
You're right. A lot of kids before 1963 got measles, mumps, rubella as a matter of growing up.
That's John Lynch, a UW Medicine infectious disease specialist at Harborview Medical Center, whom we first met last year when we were reporting on the Ebola outbreak in West Africa.
For me, I got chickenpox as a kid, and I was just not allowed to leave my yard. That was about it. The issue is that there are measurable number of complicated infections caused by measles, less so by mumps, also by rubella and things like chickenpox. And some of those are deaths. Children die of measles. Children die of chickenpox every year.
Is there any evidence that natural immunity to these diseases is somehow preferable to vaccine immunity, or even that you can build immunity through healthy living and eating the right foods?
I've had these discussions with a lot of folks who've declined, for instance, influenza vaccine. And so I say, you know, why don't you not want to get your vaccine, influenza vaccine? And we'll go through the benefits. And then they'll say, well, I prefer natural immunity. And I'll say, so you want to get influenza? No, I don't want to get influenza. Well, how are you going to get natural immunity? And so it's this weird circular argument. You know, eating healthy and having natural immunity doesn't come magically. I mean, you got to get the disease to get immune or vaccinated. So when folks are taking their kids to a party where they're going to get this infectious disease because they think natural immunity is better than vaccine immunity, there's no data to support that. One. Two, there is a rate of serious and potentially lethal complications from all of these infections.
One could argue, and some do, that by not getting immunized, you're only hurting yourself because, of course, those who do get vaccinated are protected from any outbreak of these communicable diseases. But as Dr. Duchin explains, that's not altogether true.
Currently, we have both children and adults in our community who are very susceptible to these types of severe complications and death because we have large numbers of immunosuppressed persons in the community, people on cancer, chemotherapy, on other immunosuppressive drugs for chronic diseases like inflammatory arthritis and so on. We also have infants who are too young to be vaccinated, pregnant women. Our community is very much larger and in very close contact with one another. So you're right that most people who get measles will survive it and do perfectly well. But one of the things that we value in public health is everyone's life. And we have very safe tools and effective tools to protect the minority of people who would get measles and die.
So is the recommendation to get immunized more about public health or is it about the patient's individual well-being? Dr. Opel.
That's a great question. And one of the very interesting things about vaccines is that it's not only about the child, right? Because as more children are immunized, the community in general is protected by this concept of herd immunity. A disease is less likely to be introduced and spread in a community where most people are immunized, just because there's less susceptible people to carry that infection and transmit it. So there is this public health dimension to it that's unlike my other example, an antibiotic for another infection in general, or, you know, other treatments that we do in pediatrics. So it's not an uncommon thing for parents to say, well, are you making this decision for the best interest of my child? Or are you worried about, you know, the community in general? And if so, why? And aren't you supposed to be focused on my child? So I am able to get past that pretty quickly with most parents because I acknowledge that, yes, there is this dimension, but I'm here for your child. And what we're talking about right now is really for your child and child alone. I am recommending this because I think it's in the best interest of your child. And I can't eliminate the fact that it's also in the best interest of the community. And sometimes I'll elaborate on that and say, look, even if you don't think this is in the best interest of your child, let's talk about what it does mean for the community. And some parents really respond to that by saying, I had no idea that my decision really had consequences for my neighbor two two doors down who has leukemia and can't get vaccinated. That really makes a difference to me, and I will do that. I will immunize now because of that public health component. So I don't start there, really, because some parents are concerned that they think I might not be advocating for their own child. But I do broaden from there because there is that dimension.
And in fact, when someone comes down with measles, the first thing they usually do is visit a medical facility where those most at risk, those with potentially compromised immune systems, are being treated, giving the disease a place to spread. So, Dr. Lynch advises, if you do fear you might have the measles, call first.
Here at Harborview, we recognize that a lot of people identify us as a hospital that's ready to take care of critically ill people, whatever the reason is. And so we are prepared continuously for someone to arrive with a rash that we don't know what's causing it. We got to remember, a lot of care providers, physicians, nurse practitioners, and so forth, haven't seen a case of measles or varicella. To be aware, hey, this person's got a rash and a fever, and the rash is changing. We need to get this person out of the waiting room into a single room. We got to make sure that the healthcare workers working with that person are appropriately vaccinated or immune. We're using the right personal protective equipment. So, I mean, the short answer to your question is yes, we're prepared for that all the time. We really want to communicate to our patients, too, that if you think you might have chicken pox or measles, please give us a call and we'll get prepared and we'll get you right in. We'll definitely going to take care of you, but we're going to be prepared to take care of you.
And what's the worst case scenario with these continued measles outbreaks? Again, Harborview's Dr. John Lynch.
Well, I'd say right now we have pretty good actual measles, mumps, rubella vaccination coverage. It's 99%, 98% in some communities. So I think the worst case scenario is something similar that we saw happen in the East Coast outbreak in the early 90s, where you get measles into a population that's sizable, that doesn't vaccinate. You're going to have widespread disease and deaths. I mean, it's virtually guaranteed.
So what does all this mean for you? Well, the science is clear as just about anything in medicine can be, that vaccines are safe and extremely effective. But as all the UW Medicine physicians we spoke with for this program pointed out, just stating that fact, or worse yet, ridiculing those that have fears, doesn't work.
We cannot approach the vaccine discussion without acknowledging that there are people out there who have concerns. Now, people like me feel that those concerns aren't the scientific concerns aren't valid, the medical concerns aren't valid, but that doesn't mean that the person's feelings, their emotional connections to declining vaccination aren't valid. And it's not ever going to work to walk up to someone who decides not to vaccinate him or herself or their children and say, you're stupid, or this is just wrong. You need to engage in a conversation. And this is yet another opportunity to have a conversation about measles, about mumps, tetanus, influenza vaccination.
But does having a discussion or a debate over the legitimacy of vaccines create some sort of false equivalency, giving too much credence to the side that's not backed up by science? Maybe. But all the doctors agreed that this latest measles flare-up has drawn much-needed attention to the dangers of these diseases that are no longer as pervasive as they once were, thanks to vaccines. Here's Dr. Doug Opel.
This is a good amount of attention for something that deserves it. These are diseases that aren't benign, and there's something we can do about it, vaccinate our children against them. And there's a lot of conversation that has to happen about how that happens from a regulatory standpoint and vaccine laws, but also in the doctor's office, how we talk to parents about vaccines. And I think this measles outbreak has helped us have those broader conversations.
And finally, back when we met with Dr. Lynch last year to talk about Ebola, we asked him if, as an infectious disease specialist at Harborview, he was ever afraid for his own personal safety or his family's safety. His response then was as it is now.
No, I'm an infectious disease doctor, right? I deal with people with contagious diseases every day. And people ask me, aren't you scared? And I say, no, because I know what these things do. I'm familiar with these pathogens and I know who they go after. They're not, you know, sure, I'm at risk for infectious diseases as a human being walking around, but not the same level of risk as someone who's not vaccinated against influenza or not vaccinated against measles. I'm also lucky because I have a strong public health system that basically eliminated tuberculosis in the United States, right? Those are all things as an individual, but also as a community, that we've steps we've taken over decades and centuries that have made us not scared.
I want to thank Drs. John Lynch, Doug Opel, and Jeff Duchin for participating in this fascinating and important discussion. To find out more, visit our website, uwmedicine.org/pulse. And please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes to get every episode as soon as they are released. UW Medicine Pulse is produced by Tina Knoll, associate producer Aaron Gervais. I'm Marty Reamer. Thanks for listening.